This is The Art of Awesome, episode number 334.
Nothing is scarier than standing in front of another human being that has the will, the malice, the skill set to render you unconscious. Nothing was scarier than that. And I visualized it at that moment, but I also knew there are moments in your life when you get to define who you are, and more importantly, who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that was my moment, right? And I knew, as scary as it was, I knew I would never be more alive than that moment.
Hit it!
That's what I'm talking about.
Wait!
Okay, now, from the beginning.
Hit it, boys.
Welcome to The Art of Awesome. My name is Nick Troutman, and I'm a professional athlete, entrepreneur, family man, and adventure seeker. My goal is to share with you stories, knowledge, and inspiration as we continue on the journey together, searching for that secret sauce to producing awesome results in everyday life. Thanks for spending some time with me today, and let's get to it. Welcome back, everyone, to the Art of Awesome podcast. I am your host, Nick Troutman, and this is the show where we search for that secret sauce to success and the difference between the average and the awesome. Today, we've got an amazing deep dive interview as I get to speak with a good friend of mine, Stuart Dansby, all about his film and his documentary called Taking the Fight. Stuart got into mixed martial arts and combat sports in his late 50s, and it's just an amazing message that he has to share about chasing your dreams, don't let the naysayers bring you down, and how you can achieve anything that is possible as long as you can dream it. He, again, reminds me a lot of the famous quote by George Bernard Shaw, which says, "The reasonable man adapts himself to the world, while the unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man." Stuart is that unreasonable man. He really just brings whatever his dreams are to reality. He makes them happen, and he really just showcases that anything is possible for all of us out there. So really excited to dive into this episode with you guys and share it with you guys. Also, before we dive in, I just want to let you know that I did have a little bit of a hiccup with my microphone, and my microphone was actually set in the wrong setting. So anyway, there's a little bit of an echo on some of my talking, but don't worry about that. Stuart's microphone is super clear, and there is just honestly so much value in this conversation. You're not going to want to miss any of it. So let's go ahead and dive right into it. Here is Stuart Dansby. Well, Stuart, welcome to the Art of Awesome podcast. I am absolutely stoked to have you here.
Perfect. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Truly my privilege.
So I have had the pleasure to meet a lot of individuals over my career and everything, and you are one of the select few that just really just inspires me and really showcases kind of the mentality of nothing is impossible. You got into mixed martial arts and kind of fighting at the ripe age of 56, if I'm correct. And I kind of want to like dive into your history and how you got into kickboxing and combat sports in the first place. And then kind of like what brought you into this whole thing. Because you've got a film, you've got all sorts of cool stuff that we're going to dive into. But I want to kind of start off a little bit with the history. Like what got you into combat sports at, you know, in your 50s?
Believe it or not, I get asked that occasionally. That or I have guys that look at me and go, "Are you married?" Yeah, man. How does your wife let you fight at that age? Right. That's the two biggest questions I get asked. Or
were you doing any combat stuff before 56? Like,
not. I'll take you back because it is important. So not formally, but as a kid. And I grew up in an age where getting in a fist fight was getting in a fist fight. Nobody went to jail. Nobody was expelled. Nobody talked about, you know, terrorists. You got in a fist fight. That was it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I grew up as a kid getting in fist fights, right? I was little. My mom should have never done this, but she said, "You're little. If anybody ever picks on you, know that you can fight back." And that was kind of like, I don't know how that you just, it was giving a race car driver the keys to an F1 car, right? It was like, you shouldn't have done that, Mom. Not that I would bully anybody or pick on anybody, but at any given opportunity where, you know, you're playing football, basketball, something happens, like all of a sudden I'm in a fight. And I always loved that feeling. And as an adult, you realize you probably shouldn't love that feeling or you're going to go to jail, right? So you stop those activities. But my whole life, I'd always worked out, thought I was in shape. And I always wanted to get into boxing. Friend of mine said, "Hey, I'm going to introduce you to a guy who's a kickboxer and he'll train you." I was like, kicking, it's kind of stupid. But I went for it. And I remember that first session because I have never felt more impotent as an athlete than I did that day. It was absolutely horrific. I was horrible at it. And at the end of it, he sat there and he said, "Okay, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to hit me." And at this point, I know this guy's a pro kickboxer. And I know, like, I really don't want to hit you, dude. And he's like, no, nothing's going to happen. Just hit me. And he stood right in front of me, gave me 30 seconds to hit him. And I couldn't, Nick. And after about 15 seconds, I'm standing there with my hands down at my side going, "You could probably kill me right now, couldn't you?"
Because he's just dodging. Is that right?
Blocking him. It's okay, a drill blocking. I do now with new people. I do the same drill at the end. And just let them try and hit whatever they want. And you just stand there and block it all. And once you know what you're doing, it's not that complicated with somebody that doesn't know. So he just stood there right in front of me and blocked everyone. Didn't even move out of the way. Right. And it captivated me. As difficult as it was, as humbling as it was, it captivated me. And I think part of it goes back to always wanting to fight. Right. When I was a kid, I just loved that moment. And you get this from what you do. There is that moment of absolute danger and exhilaration. And those are the moments you go in and you test, okay, what am I capable of? And it's about, what am I capable of being mentally calm and seen? And also, what am I capable of pushing my limits constantly, right? And there's a beauty in that. And there's a beauty and an art in your sport. And there definitively is in this sport. But that's what captivated me instantly. And I was like, I have to be good at this. I can't let this thing beat me this much. But it was so humbling because I thought I was an athlete. And, you know, you think you're in shape because you lift weights and because you do cardio. You're not. Because this is about movement, explosiveness, flexibility, extended cardio. Like, you don't do cardio until you're fighting with another human being for 5 minutes straight. And then you realize what cardio is, right? So that's really where it started. I took it serious enough to train with a friend of mine, but really didn't take it super serious. And I told my friend that I said, "Hey, I want to fight." And he said, "No, you don't want to live that life. You don't want to go through that. You're living the Spartan life. You can't do anything. It's brutal and it's scary. You don't want to do it. We'll just bounce from gym to gym and, you know, we'll spar a little bit." And that's what it was for the first, I think I started that at 48. And so I did that for a while, but I didn't live the life, the disciplined life of an athlete, right? It was still, you know, lifting some weights, doing that, sparring once in a while. It wasn't structured. And then I started taking my belt tests for American kickboxing. And I went through that. And again, trained hard. They were really, really hard tests. And then the guy that tests me for it, my sensei, said, "Hey, it's time to test for your black belt." And I went up to my coach. My coach is a guy named Greg Choplin, 3-time world champion, retired as the WBC world Muay Thai champion. I said, "Greg, hey, Diego wants me to test for my belt. Do you think I'm ready?" And I was probably, Nick, I was probably looking for a compliment, right? And Greg looks at me, and any good coach knows how to climb inside your head, right? And he says, "Well, I have a different take on it." I said, "What?" He said, "Well, I don't think you can be a black belt until you've taken a fight." And Nick, he turns and he walks away. And I remember staring at the back of his head. And in my mind, I'm calling him every swear word I can think of. I'm like, "You mother, you just called me out."
Yeah.
"You just called me out." And I knew right then at that moment, I knew he would never bring it up again. That wasn't Greg's style. But I said, the thing you've always wondered about, often fantasized about, mm-hmm. is right there in front of you. And in my mind, you know, nothing is scarier than standing in front of another human being that has the will, the malice, the skill set to render you unconscious. Nothing was scarier than that. And I visualized it at that moment. But I also knew there are moments in your life when you get to define who you are, and more importantly, who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that was my moment, right? And I knew, as scary as it was, I knew I would never be more alive than that moment. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's what's interesting about that is, and I feel like we probably all have these moments in life where, whether you're called out or whether you're just made aware that something is extremely challenging or almost going against the grain, but it just like it turns on a light bulb when you're like, wait a second. Like, I imagine that after all the curse words went through your head, there was probably a brief moment where you're like, you know what? He might be right. You know what I mean? Where it almost like it dawns on you and you're just like, wait a second. I think there's some truth to that. It's kind of like almost in a lot of ways, I find sometimes even when someone insults you, there's like a saying that an insult can be like a piece of gold. And just like if someone throws like a, you know, piece of solid gold at you, it's going to hurt. But if you stare down, you've got a piece of gold at your feet. And so it's like something like that where like it's going to hurt you to be like told like, oh, yeah, well, you're not a real black belt until you've done a fight. But once you get through the pain, then you're like, wait a second, there's some gold here. Like there might be some truth to this. Yeah.
I knew as he was walking away what I was going to do. You know, it took me about a week to say anything to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I finally came back up to him. I was 55 at the time. And I said, okay, I want to do it. He'd actually gone out of the country for a couple of weeks. He came back and yeah, that's what it was. It was a couple of weeks and I'd already dropped like 10 pounds. I was already in training camp mode. And he said, okay, you're clearly serious about this. He said, oh, mm-hmm. this is the only fight I've ever won with, only argument I've ever won with my coach. Cause you know, you just can't win an argument with your coach. You never, mm-hmm. never can. So this is the one I won. He said, okay, I'll get you somebody in their 50s. And I'm like, nope. He says, rolled his eyes. All right, I'll get you somebody in their 40s. I'm like, nope. 30? No. And I looked at him. I said, Greg, you will get me a first-time fighter that's had zero or one fights, just like you would anybody else. And let me tell you something. If I lose, it ain't because he's 22. And if I win, it ain't because I'm 55. The better fighter is going to win, and it's not going to be about age, period. And if you try and do anything different, I will not show up.
Mm-hmm.
Only argument I want him is, okay, you got it, right? So we went into our first training camp from there. But you're right. And that's what the documentary Taking the Fight is about. We all have these moments in life. They don't come when you expect them, right? You're not sitting around waiting to be challenged to get out of your comfort zone to achieve something that you've never achieved. They happen in business every day, right? You're overwhelmed with something. You're asked to do something that you don't have the skill set for. And it happens constantly. And what we need to recognize in those moments that we are overwhelmed, that something is like, I can't do that. That's impossible. Those are our moments to define who we are. And those are our greatest moments of growth. But mm-hmm. we need to embrace them. We need to wrap our soul around them and say, you know what? This is something exceptional. And if I go through this, even if I don't hit my goal, I will grow as a human being. I mm-hmm. will achieve more as a human being. And I will come out of that other side of it, whatever that is, whether it's public speaking, whether it's, you know, we all have a fight, right? We all do. We all have things that hold us back from what our dreams are. So we think, can't open a business because I don't have the resources of that girl. Can't be a CEO because I don't have a master's degree. Look at your life. What if somebody came to you 20 years ago and said, here's your life, Nick. You're going to go to college. You're going to get a 9-to-5 job. You're going to work in a corporation. You would, and made you buy into that, right? Look at the life you've created. And people would, if you could go back in time, people would probably say, you're nuts. You're going to live a life floating around in a 3-foot boat in a river and think you can support a family, Nick? Are you crazy? But look what you've done by embracing that dream and those challenges. And that's what I'm talking about. It happens to every one of us at all times in our life. We need to recognize that opportunity, because you come down to it, man, comfort zone is cool, and we should enjoy that for moments. But life ain't about comfort zone. Life is about achievement, right?
Yep. There's a lot to unpack there. And I totally agree with everything that you just said. Yeah, I mean, and the comfort zone is totally fine, but there is no growth in the comfort zone. You have to leave the comfort zone to grow. And so you have to recognize that, I mean, I guess just a life without growth is not a life for me personally. And I imagine that most people would actually say the same thing. And so this is where it gets like a little bit tricky. It's like trying to explain, do you want to grow in life? Do you want anything more than this, better than this, anything like that? Yeah, I guess like just the idea of chasing your dreams, is that something that you had your entire life, or was there a point in your life where you had a shift where you're like, you know what, I need to do something different to chase these dreams? Or were you just like that since you were a kid?
I think I've always been delusional. I gave a keynote speech last month to a corporation, and a lot of what I talked about is what I'm sharing with you now. How these challenges happen in business every day, because the challenges of being an athlete, and you know this, absolutely parallel life, both personally and professionally. And if you can learn those lessons of how to overcome challenges, stop looking at things as problems and obstacles and look at them as challenges, because there's two different energy fields when you say problem and obstacle, right? If I walk up to you and I say, Nick, we got a problem. Like instantly, you're like, oh. You know, your heart rate goes up a notch. If I say, hey, Nick, we have a challenge that we need to overcome. Now we're in positive mode, right? And it's teaching people that. But one of the conversations I had in that whole speech that I gave was about that, and how do we recognize those things in these moments when they come to us? So for me, and I led with, I'm delusional. I really am, because I believed I'd never done a documentary. I believed I could create a documentary and get it onto national platforms to inspire people to get out of their comfort zone and to achieve whatever their dreams are, right? I believed I could become a champion. I have a right knee that doesn't have an ACL, has grade 4 arthritis. Medically speaking, the last surgeon that was in there said, I cannot explain how you can walk on that knee. I can't even explain how you can walk on it. My left knee has a surgically repaired ACL, grade 4 arthritis. I have a degenerative disc in my neck. I have asthma, and I fight guys 30 years younger than me. And I started at a much later age. So I'm delusional. I actually believed I could do these things. A few years before that, my wife and I believed we could start a television show. We'd never done a television show, and we started it. We produced it. We wrote it. We got funding for it. We got it into national syndication for 4 years, right? So I've never been that person that said, I need to go conventionally, or I'm going to buy into what you think is possible or what you tell me I can't do. I've never thought that way, right? It's the example I give is when I'm sparring against a 22-year-old fighter, and I'm still sparring today, every Saturday, 6 rounds against professional mixed martial artists at the age of 65, I'm not thinking that kid's 22. I'm thinking, man, that kid's got a great jab and a great high kick. How are you going to combat that? Mm-hmm. All I'm focused on is how to overcome the challenges, not the impossibility of what could go wrong or what we can't do, right? And it's the same with you. If you thought limited, you would never have created this amazing life you have for yourself with a television show where you're on the road 10 to 12 months out of the year, traveling the world, living this extraordinary life with your children and your wife. Like, you've created that by not having both a limited mindset and without having a limited ability to achieve, by saying, I can achieve what I want. I can overcome what I want. I can continue to push myself out of my comfort zone. So I think you've got to be a little bit delusional to achieve your dreams, because they are yours, man. And the one thing this documentary took 9 years from inception to getting into the national platforms.
Wow.
One thing I realized, and it took me a while to realize, and I'm a very slow learner and a late bloomer for sure, is I had to be the driving energy As much as I have a partner in Roar Post Production who is an amazing human being, a guy named Carlos Arrieta, I love him like a brother. I had to be in the right way, not in a mean way, in a graceful servant leadership way. I had to be the driving energy of my dream, right? I had to be the driving energy of my dream to be a champion. I had to be the guy showing up early. I had to be the guy calling my coaches, can we train again tomorrow? I had to be the guy calling them up saying, I did this, I did that. Driving them crazy because I'm driving my dream. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think that's exactly, I mean, it's that mentality that really achieves anything. No one else ever is going to achieve your dreams for you. No one's going to just bring you this silver platter. No matter how hard you want to manifest your dreams, you think about it, you dream about it, your positive energy, all that. You could do all that stuff. But if you don't actually put in the work, then nothing happens still. You know what I mean? Like you have to do all of that. You've got to dream. You've got to stay positive. You do all that stuff. But you still got to do the work. You have to do the work because no one else is achieving your dreams for you. And so I totally understand and totally agree with exactly what you're saying. And I wonder too, because just from my several years knowing you, you're a very positive and uplifting and energetic individual. When you got into the combat sports and fighting specifically, and when at 55, when you decided like, okay, I'm going to go for my black belt and I'm going to fight. Was it at that point where you thought, you know what, I'm going to use this opportunity to make the documentary? So your documentary that we're talking about, Taking the Fight, an amazing film, and definitely we'll dive farther into this, and I highly encourage everybody to watch it because it really is just an amazing story and message. But was it after the deciding to fight where you're like, you know what, I'm going to share this message with others and be that uplifting voice? Or was it kind of first, like thinking, how can I share that message, and then deciding to fight?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So it happened like this. I decided to take that first fight. It was 55. And my first fight was going to be on a mat in a tournament. And as I'm going into training camp, people are walking up to me and saying, you're inspiring me. Mm. And Nick, I'm looking at him like, I am trying to knock a mofo out and not get knocked out. What are you possibly talking about?
Yeah.
But it kept happening. And I started to, because I'd done a television show a few years back and my partner Carlos had said, look, if you ever want to do something else, let me know. I'm always interested. Mm. And so it started to be a seed in my head, but I said, I've got to focus on this fight. I've got a training camp. That training camp was 10 weeks long. You're training twice a day. You're cutting weight. You're sparring 3-4 times a day. You're training 8-9 times a week. It is an obsession, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to distract from that. So I get to this tournament. I win my first fight. I make it to the finals. And I lose to a 20-year-old young man in the finals. A brutal fight. Nasty. He's talking trash. As soon as the fight's over, he looks at me. The second it ends, Nick, he looks at me and goes, how old are you? And I said, at that moment, I was 55. And he's like, no freaking way. No way. And they hold his hand up. The ref comes over and holds his hands up as the winner. He literally, Nick, grabs my hand. There's a great picture of this. And he's crying. His tears are pouring out. He looks at the crowd and he says, this is your champion. This is your freaking champion right here, right?
Wow.
And it was just an emotional moment. And then right after that, grown men were coming up to me out of the stands that I didn't know. Grown men. And they were holding me. Mm-hmm. And they were telling me crazy things. And as I walked off the mat that day, this is the honest truth. I said, God blessed me with a journey I shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. My coach is a 3-time world champion. My other coach is in the MMA Hall of Fame. I'm going against the number 2 ranked middleweight in the UFC sparring. And he's pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. I shouldn't have this wealth of amazing people. And my wife, who's literally in my corner saying, do it. God blessed me with this journey. And I want to show people how they can achieve this. And the documentary, as you know, fighting is the metaphor to tell the story. It's no more a fighting documentary than Rocky is a boxing movie.
Exactly.
It's not a boxing movie, right?
Yeah.
So we use fighting as the metaphor to show people how to get out of your own head. How to put that, I want it more than I want to breathe energy into this world. Because especially in this country, the people and the resources you need to achieve your dream, they're all around you. They're all around you right now. But you're not accessing them till you give that dream that relentless daily energy. And when something or someone comes forward, you give it even more energy, right? And that's the journey that I wanted to tell people is you can do, if I can do it, I'm nobody special. And I'm not, man, I'm just a conduit to deliver this message within the film. But that's when it hit me. And I went and I sat with Carlos about a week later and I told him everything I'm doing and I'm pouring my heart out like this. And a couple interesting things happened. I said to him, I said, I will pay for this out of my pocket. Having known the cost of a TV show, I figured I could afford this. And he looks at me and says, okay, everything you just described is a feature length documentary. He said, you got $250,000 in your pocket? And I said, I won't pay for this out of my pocket. It's the first thing that came out of my mouth. And I said, but Carlos, you're still talking to me. He said, yeah, we'll partner with this. We'll do it. It'll be on my timeline when my crew is not getting paid, when they're not working, it'll be in their free time and we'll do it. The other compelling thing was he looked at me and he said, this is not a story of fighting. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, brother, this is a story of love. And I was like, you're right. It's a story of a love for a dream. It's the love of my coaches, the love of a team that pushed me and literally kicked my butt with love and scream at me to get back up. It's the love of my wife who's in my corner helping me to fulfill that and being both my source and my rock, right? And it really is a story of love.
I think anyone who watches the film, and definitely, again, I highly encourage everybody go check it out because it truly is an inspiring film. I watched it with my son, and it was interesting, actually, because I was doing some more research stuff before I was preparing for the interview, and Tucker's like, oh, you watching the movie again? Because we watched it together, and he just absolutely loved it. And just like what you're saying, like a Rocky film or something, you finish with just feeling so inspired to not to go fight, not to jump in the MMA ring or kickboxing or do any of that stuff, but just to chase your dreams, to realize that there really are no limitations. You know what I mean? And I think that's another beautiful thing about your story and about the film versus even just something like a Rocky film or something like that, is that the age is such a, like an outlier. It's just something, and again, I know that it's probably something that you don't love to like focus in on, but I think a lot of people look at that and they're, because I hear it all the time where people are like, just as far as kayaking goes, they're like, ah, oh, I mean, that's super cool what you do, but I can't do it. I mean, I'm too old now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What, like, where has this mentality of like, I'm too old? I'm hearing it literally from like 30, 35 year olds, 40 year olds. And I'm like, come on guys, what do you mean you're too old? Like, I've got friends of mine that I went to school with and they're just like, oh yeah, I'm starting to feel stiff. You know, it's getting old. And I'm like, what are you saying? Like, the things that you say, you start to believe. And so you can either believe that you're getting old or that you're too old, or like you can believe that you have no limits and that you can do anything. And to me, that's the message. And my father-in-law is another like individual that I love to train in the gym and stuff with, specifically because I'm like, man, I hope when I'm in my 60s, I'm, you know, pumping iron like this and doing the whatever, if we're going for a run or a jog or whatever. And to me, that's the message that I love beyond just to chase your dreams and do the impossible. But it's like, it's the same mentality of like, it's to a whole nother level of saying like, not only should you chase your dreams and don't listen to the naysayers and all that stuff, but don't let age ever be a limiting factor. Don't let anything, like there are so many naysayers in the world where they say, you know, you're too old, you're too young, you're too skinny, you're too fat, you're too this, you're too that, you're not wealthy enough, you're not this enough, like whatever it is, like there's just all these naysayers out there saying something that you're not. And I think that this story really just, like every single thing, it just goes beyond over and over and over of like, no, we're going to overcome any hurdle that comes. Like in the film, and I'd love for you to kind of dive deeper into it as well. But when you have your title fight, there are all the hurdles that come up with that where, and fill me in, but where the boxing, like they didn't want to give you the fight and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the Florida Boxing Commission, they absolutely didn't want to give me a license, right? And no one had fought at my age that was licensed. And so as we started, I'm in a training camp, we start the training camp. And again, it's about an 8-week training camp. And the promotion sends me this list from the State of Florida Boxing Commission saying, now they want you to take a physical ahead of time. And I'm like, I've never had to do that. They do it at fight time. What is this? And it's a 3-page gauntlet of tests I have to get done. So I don't say anything. I just go and do it, take the test, turn them in. 2 weeks go by. The promotion calls me and they say, okay, hey, now they want proof of your previous fights. What? And they want proof of your opponent's previous fights. So I had to do this research, do that, send it in. A couple weeks go by, still no license. Promotion calls me again and says, hey, now they want sparring video. And at that point I stopped and I'm like, that's unprecedented. What do you mean they want sparring? Yeah, they want to actually see that you can spar. So I sent them video purposely unedited. They said, just send us a couple minutes. And I did 3 5-minute rounds against 2 MMA pro champions and 1 amateur champion. And guys that are better than me, because I said, and my message through the promotion was, these are the guys I spar with every day. These are the monsters I go against. I can send you edited video of me banging up somebody who's not as good as me, but I'm showing you who I'm going against.
Yeah.
So I send that in, a couple weeks go by. It's literally a week before my weigh-in, and I still don't have the license. Now, when you're going through a training camp, like when you prepare for a championship, again, you're training twice a day, you're cutting weight, your mind obsesses about the fight, and it should, and your whole world is consumed in this. And then you have this other added element, what I call the cancer, and the cancer can creep in. The cancer can be something as simple as, what if I get knocked out? What? That's a cancer, right?
I call that the demons of the mind.
Yeah, because it'll turn into a tumor and it'll grow. So you have to crush it with positivity, right? And I dealt with that in previous fights. But in this fight, I was super confident. I was absolutely sure I was going to win. The cancer kept coming up every time this happened. And I'd have these moments of, what if I go through a training camp and they deny me? What if I don't get a license? So I get a call on a Friday afternoon. And the promotion says, okay, now they want, after they've done everything, they want an EKG stress test and a bleed out test. A bleed out test is to see how quickly your blood coagulates in case you get split open. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And I think this actually came, I know this came out of my mouth and I'm embarrassed, but I said, that's ageism. So I instantly played the victim. That's why I'm pointing this out. I became a victim at that moment. I said, that's ageism, right? And then I said, how long do I have to do this? And they said, Wednesday. I'm like, it's Friday afternoon. If you don't have it by Wednesday, the fight's off. Your weigh-in is Saturday. You got to have it. So I start calling all these places. And what I find out, when you find a place that does EKG stress test, they say, okay, yeah, you just need a prescription from your cardiologist. And I'm like, I don't have a cardiologist. I don't have a heart problem. Sorry, we can't do it. So I run out of time Friday. I literally Monday morning drive to my GP's office. And Nick, I probably came in pretty hot, right? I'm like, I need this EKG, this bleed out test. And I got to have a cardiologist and I need a cardiologist, but I don't have a stress test because I don't have a cardiologist because I don't have a heart problem. She looks at me, she goes, Stuart, give me the coffee. You don't need this. Sit down. I'm like, but you know, she's like, I do. You were in here before to get in the physical. You explained it to us all. I get you. Right. She goes in back. She comes back out. She goes, I just want to make sure I could do this. She says, we share an office with the cardiologist. And Nick, when I started this, remember the thing I said is God blessed me with a journey I shouldn't have. And my goal has been 100%. It's not been to make money. It's to share this message. And I say this now, people probably think I'm corny. I think God was watching over me and said, you know what? We're doing something good here. I'm going to help him out. Right. And I really believe that. He said, come in Wednesday morning. Cardiologist will get your test done. and we'll get it for you. And when I came in, I sat down with him for 15 minutes and told him the whole story. I had to establish a relationship. And I said, my blood pressure right now is about 120 over 180. And I said, that's what you're going to get because this is everything to me. Mm-hmm. But I will kill your stress test. Do not look at the blood pressure. I will kill your stress test. I promise you. And I did. And he said, I'm staying late. Come in tomorrow morning, pick this up, and it'll be ready. And it was. Flipped it to the promotion. They called me the next day and they said, go sell some effing tickets. You got your license, right? But it took that. Now, what it really took was when they called me that Friday, I was in a victim mentality. And I called my wife, Stella. And mm-hmm. Stella is not good at letting me be a victim. Mm-hmm. She's better as a teammate. And she said, baby, let me tell you something. If I'm the state of Florida and I see a 62-year-old fighting a 32-year-old on paper, I'm getting as far away from you as I can get. You're not just a liability. You might die in that cage, right? Mm-hmm. And this is my wife. She's like, they don't know you. They don't know the world champion coaches you have. They don't know how hard you train. They don't know how you've committed your life to this. They don't know the monsters you go up against. They don't know you. And you're a fighter. So freaking fight them. Fight them at their own game. Find a way to get this done and do it, right? And that's what I needed. That's what I needed to get me out of that victim mentality, there being ageism. No, it was a challenge. It wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an obstacle. It was a challenge. And once I put it into that mentality, we beat that mm-hmm. and we overcame it, right? But we all need those people in our life, even and especially me, because the stress got to me and I started thinking like this narrow and it can't be done and it's a problem instead of thinking, how can I achieve it, right? So there was mm-hmm. a great lesson there. And that, you know, when you look back on it, man, it made for a great documentary, that drama, right? I didn't want to go through that, but it did.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it really speaks to just like having, you know, a spouse, a wife, a partner, anybody like that, that you can, in those times where, you know, the vision gets narrow, that you can turn to and that is there to kind of help really see the bigger picture here. And it reminds me of a phrase that I try to remind myself of when I think of like my back's against the wall, and it's that it's not a lack of resources, it's a lack of resourcefulness that's your problem. Meaning that like when things are hard, don't think that like what you're saying, don't get in that victim mentality. Start thinking, okay, I just need to get creative. We can solve any problem. Just be resourceful. And it also reminds me of, we've talked personally, you know, many times about different books that we're reading, and I'll dive into that in our fire round in a second. But have you read The Alchemist? Have we talked about The Alchemist?
I read that years, probably decades ago. We haven't talked about that. But yeah, okay. I did read that long, long time ago.
But your story reminds me a little bit about The Alchemist, about the idea that when you have, you know, a deep seated desire and dream and goal, if you just keep at it, the universe, God, the universe, whatever you know, want to call it, will align and help put things in your path to help you achieve these things. And so the fact that, you know, that your doctor is right beside the cardiologist and all this stuff, to me, that's just like, it's like straight out of that book where it's like, no, we're going to line it up, but you have to not give up, because if you, all these challenges, you could just give up and call it quits and be like, oh, couldn't do it because of this, couldn't do it because of that. But if you just keep going and you never give up, I swear the universe, like it's almost like they'll put up like a challenge just to see how much do you really want this. And if you really want it, keep going. More often than not, for myself and I'm sure for you as well, that things just start to align in your favor. And you're like, ah, good thing I didn't give up, because just around the next corner, you know, this lucky thing happened for me.
You're so dialed in. I'll tell you two other things that transpired. I went down the Saturday before my fight. It's called promotion day, where they'll interview you, photos, video to promote the fight, right? And mm-hmm. as I went down there, I just decided to take another fight. This wasn't part of the documentary. And the promoter looks at me, and as he's interviewing me on camera, says, yeah, and Stewart's going to be filming his documentary. And I kind of went, I am? I look up like, really? And it was like, pay attention. He's telling you something. He literally said it. And then because we'd gone through all these challenges and the welterweight kickboxing belt was vacant, the promotion went, because of how you've conducted yourself, because of all these challenges, because of who you're facing, we're going to make this a title fight. This is a documentary. You can't script it. I can't mm-hmm. make these things happen per se. Mm-hmm. But then again, based on what you just said, we do have the power to make these things happen. When we align ourselves, you know, we use the word inspired a lot. And mm-hmm. and I'm blessed to get that a lot. And to me, that comes with responsibility when people say, you're inspiring me. But the word inspired means to be in spirit, to mm-hmm. be in spirit with whatever you're doing. When you're in the middle of a river, going through some crazy rapids, you are 100% in spirit. The rest of the world doesn't exist. Nothing exists. All that exists is that river, your boat, your paddle, and you, and those three are one, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where you need to be when you pursue your dream. It doesn't need to be in anger. You don't want it in emotion. You want it to be in spirit. And when you function in spirit, you'll attract, again, the people and the resources, the things will fall in place. Just exactly what you said, man. They will. I'm proof of it.
I think it's just, and there is so much proof of that if you were to just look around really and see it. But it takes that person and that individual to actually look around and really witness that. It reminds me too of the, I've heard luck defined as luck is opportunity meeting preparation, meaning that a lot of people will say, oh, well, it's lucky that you got the title fight, or it's lucky that this, or it's lucky that that. And you're like, well, you're not seeing all the preparation that met that opportunity. Do you know what I mean? Because you could also meet many opportunities without preparation, and that's not lucky anymore. Now you're just, it's wasted opportunity because you can't take advantage of it. And so to me, I think we all make our own luck in a lot of ways. And it really just comes to being prepared. I've yet to meet anybody that is successful in any aspect of life, whether it be business, whether it be relationships, whether it be parenting, whether it be athletics, no matter what it is. I've never met someone that just, their whole story is like, man, I was just lucky. I didn't do anything. I was born lucky. I didn't do any work. I was lucky. Everything was given to me.
It's part of, and I talk about this in the documentary, sit down and talk to anybody who's had any level of success in business, in relationships, and you see somebody with a perfect marriage, somebody with mm-hmm. a great career, sit down and talk to them and get them to actually tell you, and you'll be shocked at the amount of obstacles and problems and adversity that they chose to overcome by looking at it as a challenge, sticking to whatever their love was or their dream was, right? Mm-hmm. And just writing it out. And you're 100% right. I say this all the time, minimally. I've lost 10 rounds for every round I win. Mm-hmm. Nick, I get my ass kicked 10 times to win once. And you talk to people that say, well, I tried to do this and it didn't work. And it's like, okay, how many rounds did you lose? And in every one of the, we have an expression in fighting. You'll appreciate this. And I think we've shared it. You win or you learn. Anything in between is ego. Mm-hmm. So have a coke and a smile and shut the F up. If you're making excuses, did you win? No. Then what did you learn? Well, but the judge, no. Did you win? No. What did you learn? I don't care about the judges. I don't care about the river wasn't good. No. Did you win or did you learn? That's all that matters. And if you choose to learn, then maybe next time it's, I get win one round to lose nine. Mm-hmm. And that's where our progress comes from. I think the big challenge, and at the risk of sounding, a lot of guys my age sound really negative towards a younger generation, Gen Z. and millennials, right? And that's typical of every generation. They all, you know, when I was a kid, like the older generation, oh, you guys are useless and you're going to run the world. And, you know, and that's, it is, right? As you get older, you realize every generation hates that young generation and you judge them and everything else. And the young generation looks at you and says, you don't know, no, you don't even know. You don't know my world, right?
Yeah.
But more than ever, with the rise of social media and the rise of things like reality TV, instant gratification has become a mandate for us culturally. So people, and I see this with the young generation, I work in the corporate world, and they'll come in and they'll say, where's my plan? What do you mean? Well, I should have a plan on how I'm successful in this company. There should be step one, step two. They don't say this, but I'm entitled to a plan of how to be successful. That's what I need. Right now, you have so many people that will try and do something and they give up after a couple months or a couple of years. Hey, they don't fully even apply themselves. And we live in a society that is instant gratification focused. And unfortunately, that's not the reality of life and achievement. Again, to go back to your point, oh my God, how many years have you been doing this? How many times have you wiped out? How many concussions have you had to become a champion?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't happen overnight. And you go through that adversity. And you know what? That adversity, man, that's what makes it all worthwhile. That's the beauty of it. Because without that, you just can't appreciate it, right?
Well, and I think, again, we've talked about this a lot, but just the mentality of win or learn. There is no lose. Because that's, again, that to me defines the growth mindset. Of the sense that no matter what happens, I'm either going to win and succeed at what I'm aiming for, or I'm going to learn and I'm going to come back stronger. And I'm going to grow that way. And so it really just, everything is upside. Do you know what I mean? And not that, like, obviously everybody wants to win. Like, that's the whole, you know, goal. But it took me, it definitely, I mean, I didn't have this mentality when I was 18. It took me a couple years to figure it out. But I started recognizing, and part of it was from the books that I was reading and the podcasts I would listen to and all this stuff, and just reflecting too. I think there needs to be some inner reflection to realize, wait a second, I can have the victim mentality here where I say, oh, the judges weren't on my side, or this happened, or that happened, or luck was against me, or I can't believe they, you know, gave that person this and I didn't get that, or whatever it is. You can have that victim mentality, or you can just turn that off and be like, I'm not going to be a victim. And then you open up the growth mentality, you open up that vision to be like, okay, what can I learn from this? Even if you can be totally taken advantage of, do you know what I mean? And you're like, okay, what can I learn from this? What's the lesson here for me to learn? Instead of thinking like, oh, this, that, sore me, like sad me, da 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 da. Do you know what I mean? And so, again, it's kind of like the old saying of like, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, where it's like, wait a second, if I'm not learning from these mistakes, then shame on me. Then that's on me for not taking the advantage of learning, because everybody has these opportunities ahead of us. And so, I love that mentality of thinking like win or learn, there is no lose. And the irony about that too is that for me, I have to also remind myself when I win, and again, this comes from years of experience, winning and losing, to really think and reflect, okay, where could I still have improved when I did win? Because that's the other thing that I feel like, speaking for my own experience, it's easy to fall prey when you win to think, it's my skill. You know, it's because I'm so good. It's because of all my training. But for me anyway, it rarely or it, certainly in the past, would I look back at my winning performances and be like, wait a second, there's still lessons to be learned. There's still room for improvement. So what could I have done better for next time? And that's like, again, it goes really into that growth mentality of like trying to always learn of like, where can I improve? Win or lose, win or learn. Where can I be improving each time?
Yeah. And, you know, I'll go back to what you were talking about a few minutes ago with friends of yours that are in their 30s saying, oh, I'm too old to kayak. Well, what's happened there is that even in their 30s, we've sought comfort, right? So we get to a certain income level, we get out of school, we get a job, we get a career. Now, maybe we have a nice, a decent home, right? And we're living a certain, and we're living comfortably. And it doesn't mean you don't work hard at work. But we're in this comfort zone, and we have a few aches and pains. And so we don't do anything to slow the aging process. We don't work out, which is the number one thing, right? That slows the aging process. And we just, and if we do, it's like, yeah, but that's risk. If I go do what Nick does, that's risk. And there might be some pain there, right? And people just seek that comfort zone. It's natural, right? But you have to be aware of it, because the question, someone asked me this question last year, and they said, when are you going to quit doing this? And it's, again, that's a question I get asked frequently. And my answer was, at what age should I stop achieving? At what age should I stop contributing to others? At what age should I stop pushing to be the best human being that I can? Because whatever age that is, I don't want to hit it, because that's when I'm going to get old. Right.
Yeah.
And it is the mentality you're talking about. People are like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm getting old at 35, and you want to smack them, right?
I
you just
do.
Want to wake the F up. You're getting old because you're mentally getting lazy, because you're allowing yourself to remain in this comfort zone, what you think you're not supposed to do, because it's going to take some work.
Yeah.
But my God, isn't that the beauty of life?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where life lives. You know what I mean? It's when you're not living, you're dying. And when you're not aiming, you're essentially dying slowly, or not so slowly for some people. And it really, like what you're saying with the age thing, at what age do you stop reaching for your potential? Another way to put it, at what age do you just straight up give up? Is there an age? Do we put a limit on that? Come on. I personally, I don't want to give up ever. So like, it's like we should always be trying, and yeah, it, yeah.
There is a dramatic spike in alcoholism rate. And I don't know the details anymore, but when people retire, the alcoholism spike is crazy. Because why? They're sitting around. Oh, I can drink during the day now. Boom. I got nothing to do. I got nothing to accomplish. I'm just going to sit here and seek comfort. And you just, to your point, you really start aging, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you should do something as risky as what Nick Trautman does or what I do. That is not what I'm advocating. What I'm advocating, though, is you have one life and you're here to achieve.
Yeah.
And so many of us get caught up in what society tells us we should do and what we should think of and think like. And we deny that we even have our own dream. Again, this is something I was asked recently on a podcast. And I'm like, we all, there's so many people that have a dream and they've stuffed it to the back of their head because I can't be a good parent because I had lousy parents, right? Or whatever it is, man. So first off, let it come to fruition. Own it, man. And then just put your soul into it and have the, put the people, the skill, education, and resources to get you where you want to be. And you'll attract that with your energy. Right. And then embrace that with no ego, with no ego, because they're going to push you. Those people are going to push you if they're the right people, with one goal: to achieve your dreams. Right. And and give those people more than they thought they were going to get. Because when they do, when you do, they're going to give you back more than you thought you had. I was training Friday with my coach, and I have had more injuries this year than I have in the last 10, and injuries that have kept me from training. I've been down to like 2 days a week. I haven't been able to train in the sport I love, and I've gotten healthy in the last month. A lot of stretching, a lot of saunas. You and I think have talked about this as well. A lot of what my wife calls self-love, right? I'm a fighter. I'm like, we don't do that, but it is, it's self-love, right?
Yeah.
And we were training, I was training with my coach Friday, and he was pushing me hard, really hard, right? Just making me repeat the same move over and over and over. Nope, do it again. Nope, do it again. And there was a moment inside when I smiled and I'm like, man, I'm exhausted right now. And he's pushing me. And he looked at me and he goes, you tired? I'm like, it's a family podcast, so I won't use the words. And I said, no, MF-er, I'm not. Let's go. You need to rest. Your hands okay holding that pad?
Right? I love it.
But I was so grateful for that moment because I could feel it. I'm like, you got to dig deep right now. You've got to dig deep for this. And I'll take you back to a story. In that first training camp where the film opens, which is my first fight in a ring, I was going, it was a Friday afternoon. And I probably the seventh or eighth time I trained, I was exhausted. I was in the dirt. I trained with my coach, Greg, for an hour. Then a bunch of fighters file in. Then we start a technique class. Then 2.5 hours in, we start sparring. I'm going against a 135-pound fighter. I fight at 170. This kid is kicking my butt, Nick, destroying me. He keeps coming and clinching me and hitting me with knee after knee after knee in my kidneys. I get done, and Greg walks over, and he just starts ripping me. What is that? You were horrible. Why are you? That was awful. And I looked at him. I said, Greg, catch this. I said, Greg, I'm exhausted. I'm on my eighth session of the week. I am beat. I did the best I could. And he whips out his phone, and he had filmed the last round. He goes, look, take a look at this. Is this the best you can do? My hands are down at my waist. I look like a guy who doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you don't get it. And listen to this wisdom. You're supposed to be exhausted. You're supposed to be tired. You're supposed to be at that point where you want to quit. But in your case, you don't want that moment. You got to want that moment. You got to own that moment when you're tired, when you want to quit, when it seems like you're overwhelmed, when it seems like you can't do it. You got to mentally own that moment and say, this is my moment. And you've got to embrace it. And that's how you push yourself past. And if you don't do that, and I'm going to speak metaphorically, if you don't do that, you're not a fighter and you'll never be a champion. Now, that's what he said to me directly, but those words resonated with me to every human being, because everybody you talk to will tell you, I'm a fighter, right? I fight. Okay, well, those are the moments that you embrace and you look for, and you just wrap your arms around them and go, man, this is growth. I'm going to get my butt kicked, whether it is physically, whether it is metaphorically, whether it is emotionally, whether it is going into a presentation for a meeting, like, okay, but that's my moment to grow and get better, right?
I love that. That's one thing that combat sports seems to hold above a lot of others, in my perspective anyway, is that if I'm a marathon runner, and trust me, I love running, but, and don't take this any, if you're a marathon runner out there, don't take this as any sort of insult, but if you get tired, you can stop. You can take a break. You can walk for a little bit. You know what I mean? If you're in the ring and you get tired, you don't just say, hey, let's just ease up for a little bit. You keep going. It keeps coming. And that's the same with the river. And that's one of my big draws to the rivers. Once you peel out and you're in the rapids, it doesn't stop till you get to the end of the rapid. Like you can't just time out the river. Yeah, it's not how that works. And so that you're forced. And I guess it's just any of these environments where you're forced into the moment, and you're living it. And there is no just like time out of like, hey, let's just not do this. Or let's just, I'm going to stop. You know what I mean? Like it forces you through the exhaustion. It forces you through, and it holds that awareness in the presence. Like you really need to be present there. And, yeah, I mean, as far as the film goes, there's just so much we've been talking, you know, about this, about the storytelling and about everything and the lessons learned. And I gained so much about it. But and I want to hear in a second, if you were to sum the whole thing up into one sentence, what it would be for you. But for me, what I got out of it, and I'm curious if it's similar, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth at all. So I really want to hear your perspective. But for me, the whole message was chase your dreams, but really it encourages others not just to chase them, but to invite them, like, hey, not only should I watch me how I chased my dreams, but you should all be chasing your dreams too. And so I'm just more curious when you were, and I'm also curious too, when you started the film, was that the message I guess, is that the message, or what is the message that you felt that you were like when you finish watching the film, when it's all said and done, what is the message, if you were to put in one sentence, that you want the viewers to walk away with? And was that the same message when you started the film versus when you finished the film?
Yeah. When we started the film, we worked really hard to make sure that it wasn't a fighting documentary, that anybody could watch it and get it right. We did the film festival circuit last year, and we were screened in 26 different festivals, and we were blessed to garner 32 different awards, right?
Wow.
For me, the best part, and we won best feature documentary, best inspirational, best sports, best editing, best direction, best original music. But the real reward for me was when I would go to those film festivals and I would have people come up to me that would say clearly, I'm not an athlete. I would never even watch a fighting movie.
Mm-hmm.
I watched this and I get what I need to do to achieve what I want to achieve in my life.
Mm-hmm.
The LA Documentary Film Festival sent us, we were blessed to win that for best sports documentary. And they sent me a videotape of viewers' critiques, right? And they sent me a link, and a couple of days later, they called me. They said, did you watch it? And I said, no. And they're like, why not? I'm like, because if they said bad things, I don't know what to do. And they said, would you just go watch that, the director? He's like, you won the festival. Like, go watch it. And what was compelling, I watched it with my wife and we both cried because it was six different people and very different walks of life. And every one of them got the message. And so for us, that was what we wanted to do, is we wanted to show people, number one, have the strength of character to recognize what your dream is. Mm-hmm. And number two, the simple way, the method, not just the, yeah, go get it, but the way that you have to go about achieving it, and the amount of work and the amount of adversity and the amount of challenges you're going to have. And you see me go through all this, you never see me mad. You don't. You see me literally getting kicked by my coach in the ribs, and you see me smiling, right? Because the journey is such a blessing. So I think for me, if I were to put it in words for people, is that we all have a fight, right? Mm-hmm. We all have things that hold us back from what our dreams really are. And the one thing I would share with people is to do what you love. Give it that I want it more than I want to breathe energy.
Mm.
And keep your eyes open, because those people are going to come to you. I talk about this in the documentary. And the other thing to your point was really challenging for me was to make sure that this didn't come across as a narcissistic, look at me journey. We re-edited this thing six times, went through six different editors because they didn't get it. And I'm like, oh, it's clunky. It's about me. No, it can't. And we finally found someone that actually had known me for 10 years that had worked with us on our TV show, came forward and said, give it to me. I know Stuart. I know this story. Let me have it, right? So we finally edited it where it was metaphorically every person's story, every person's journey, right? There's three things I bring to the table, Nick. And I'm going to say I bring to the table because everybody has these three things that have allowed me to become a champion, okay? Number one, you can't outwork me. You can't. I watch you working. I'm watching you and I'm like, okay, you're going to do one more round. I'm going to do two. You're going to do two more rounds. I'm going to do three. You can't outwork me. Any human being in the world can own that. You can't outwork me. My competition can't outwork me.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, daily, nobody can have a stronger desire to learn than me. Nobody, you can't come into this day wanting to learn more and looking at adversity and saying, nope, that's not a problem. What can I learn from it? Just what you said and what you do, right? Number three, you can't bring more positive energy than me every day. If you have those three things, you can't outwork me, you can't want to learn more than me, and you can't have more positive energy than me. What I've learned is that your possibilities are endless. Your potential is unlimited. Right? And that's the message that I would share with everybody. We all have a fight. So do what you love and be your own inspiration.
I love that. I love that. And it really just reminds everybody that we are the main character in our own story. So make sure that you wake up every day and live that main character life.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? That's a great way to put it, brother.
Yeah. Stuart, I could talk with you for hours on end about this. You and I, when we get to hang out in person, I feel like we're just such similar mentality and just very similar lifestyle. Well, I don't know if our lifestyle is the same, but just the direction of how we perceive the world is very much, I feel like we're on the same wavelength. But I'm going to move us on to the last segment of the show. I call this the fire round. I'm going to kick off a couple quick questions, and you're used to boxing, so I mean, I think you're pretty quick on your feet. This is going to be pretty easy for you. But do you have a favorite quote or a current quote that you live by?
I have a couple of them. I really do. One is from my former idol, John Paul Mitchell, Paul Mitchell Hair Products. My former idol, okay? In case no one got that. But I read a quote from him years ago, and it says, successful people do what unsuccessful people don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Every time I'm like, crap, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have that tough conversation. I got to do that. It plays in my head. Successful people do what unsuccessful. And then I'm like, okay, who are you? Who are you? Right. And that just stays with me every day. And another one is from Lee Iacocca, the former chairman of Chrysler. And he said, every person that I've ever met that was successful had one thing in common, a sense of urgency to get things done today. And that I let play through my head and drive me, right? And then there's one that's my own, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is, it's funny because people play it back to me now. Three things happen every day: excuses, apologies, and results. Only one matters, right? Only one matters, man. That's it.
I love that. I haven't heard that last one, and I'm going to write that down on my wall over here because it is so true. Ah, I love that. Stuart, do you have a favorite book or a recent book that you've been reading?
I have one that I'm reading right now. There's a gentleman named Andre Rush, or Chef Rush, on social media. And he's a combat wounded veteran. Mm-hmm. He was the White House chef through four administrations. He does 2,000 push-ups a day for suicide prevention for veterans. Wow. And he's an extraordinary human being. He is one of those people that I look to as an inspiration. And his book is called Call Me Chef, Damn It. And he's an extraordinary chef and does ice sculpture, like just this immensely gifted guy who openly admits, I have PTSD. Mm-hmm. And I deal with it. And he's out here inspiring human beings. And I like almost everything I read is nonfiction, because there's got to be a purpose. And you and I have talked about this, but I just cracked that book recently, and I'm about three chapters in, and it's his whole life story of how he grew up. So interesting, because you and I have shared some books, but this is a biography that you can really, I think, learn a lot about a human being who's living and breathing today and contributing to this world. When I look at what people say about me, and I look and I go, no, that guy's the real deal, right? Andre Rush, Chef Rush.
I'm going to have to check that out for sure. That definitely seems right up my alley.
Yeah, it is.
If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, what might be?
Interesting. It would probably be to be more present with understanding who you are and what you want to achieve in this life, right? And I think when I was younger, I went through what I call my blind ambition days, where it was just achieve in business, get material things, right? Live that high life. And I think if I could step back and say, I had a great life and it was exciting, but if I could step back and say, you know what, get a perspective on what's really important to you. Step back, be in the moment, be more, if I could make myself more emotionally mature back then, that's what I would strive to work for. Does that make sense?
it makes perfect sense, and it's funny because that's such a good reminder to all of us. I regularly try to think of these things, but even still, just hearing it for today, I'm like, you know, I really need to focus on what are the important things in my life. You know what I mean? And regularly think that. What are the important things? What are the important things?
Three things, or three greatest assets from my point of view, right? Our three greatest assets that we have to manage: time, love, and health.
Mm-hmm.
Time will consume us because the world is pulling us in all these different directions. You have to manage what's really important in my day, right? Go do this. I can get distracted here. I can get distracted on social media. I can get distracted. I can go down this rabbit. What's really important? Manage your time, manage your health, your entire life. Because if you're not managing your health, then it is declining if you're not managing it, like anything in life, right? And love, right? Time, love, and health, man. Manage those three things. The people, by manage, I mean be aware of love. Be appreciative of love. Be respectful of love, right? Because when we manage it that way, those three things are pretty golden.
Mm, I absolutely love that. Stuart, this brings me to my final question, and I'm curious if it's any different from what you just said, because it's so in line. If today was your last day on Earth, and everything that you've done, all your films, your videos, all your work, all your speeches, presentations, all everything was to go away with you, all your achievements, and all you were left with was a piece of paper and a pen, and you could write down three truths. This could be for your wife, for future generations, three truths that you're going to leave to the world when you're gone. What might those three truths be?
Wow, that is tough, Nick. Wow, I've never thought of that. I think the first truth would unequivocally be that my wife Stella is my world and my universe, and has made my life extraordinary and allowed me to be a better human being. I think that would be my first truth. My second truth would be to share with people, just live the most passionate life you can possibly live. Like, just simply go for it continually every single day. And my last truth would be to live in appreciation. If you think about the word anger, okay, it is absolutely impossible for you to be angry at anyone or anything if you're in a state of appreciation. When you're mad at your wife, first off, you're wrong. I know this because I'm a married man. So we're both wrong at that moment for being mad at her. But secondly, you're not appreciating her, right? When you're mad at your kids, you're not appreciating them. When you're mad at anything, you lack appreciation. So if you can function as highly as you can, as much as you can in the 24 hours you have every day, if you can keep 22 of those hours of appreciation, you're going to live an amazing life. Because when you're in that state of appreciation and gratitude, everything comes to you and everything is good, right? Yeah. Those are the three things I would share.
I love that. Stuart, where can everybody go check out the film? I, again, absolutely love this conversation. I love your film, Taking the Fight. Where can I send people to go watch it?
It is currently streaming on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, iTunes, and Google Play. And if you forget any of that, takingthefight.com, there's a tab that says where to watch. Click on that tab and it'll take you directly to those links. So thank you for asking. And I think we're streaming in 36 different countries.
Wow. Again, it is an absolutely amazing film. I highly encourage everybody to go watch it. Watch it with your kids, with your spouse, anybody. I mean, it's just such an amazing message and story and film. The whole thing is very well done. Go check it out. I'll have all the links in the show notes. One of the things that I try to do, Stuart, as much as I can, is I gain so much value out of these conversations and these podcast interviews and everything. Is there anything that I can do for you to bring value to you? Is there anything that I can help you with? Or is there anything that you're working on that myself or maybe my audience might be able to help out with?
You know, thank you so much for asking that, Nick. This, what you're doing today is, right? The question I get asked now is what's next? And what's next is people got to watch this. I spent 9 years of my life making the documentary, 15 years of my life committed to fighting, 6 years of actual fighting. And it's not to have a documentary on a platform and brag about it. It's to change and affect people's lives in a positive way. And I know when they watch it, that they do. I know that it does affect people positively. So what you're doing right now, I'm so appreciative and grateful for, because now all of my energy is into doing podcasts and interviews to get people to watch the documentary. I know it will affect them in a positive way. And we need that. If you go on Netflix right now and you put in documentaries, I want you to do that and look. And every single documentary will be dark and negative. It's the dark side of sports. It's the dark side of the Ukraine war. It's all these horrible things. Every documentary is negative, right? And we need some positivity in this world, man. We need some positive message that's real, that's not scripted, that shows you the way to leave your highest achieving life and your most appreciative life. So what you're doing right now, man, I'm grateful for it. Okay.
I love that. Continue
to share that message when the opportunity comes up. And that's all I ask.
Yeah. I love that. And couldn't agree anymore that the world needs a little bit more of that positive message and that we're sharing. So thank you for doing that. For those that would like to continue on to follow along with your journey, where's the easiest way for them to reach out? Is it the website Taking the Fight or your social media? Where should people connect with you or follow along?
You can certainly contact me off the website, takingthefight.com, but I am on social media as Stuart Warren Dansby on both Instagram and on Facebook, not as much, but I'm there. So please ping me if you have any questions. I have a lot of older guys now. They're fighting, guys in their 30s, 40s. There's some locally here in Miami in their 50s. They're all pinging me and saying, hey, I realize I can do this. And listen, this isn't about fighting per se. Is about whatever your dream is, right? So hit me up if you have any questions, and I'm happy to encourage.
Awesome. I absolutely love that. Stuart, my final question of the day for you is, what is your definition of awesome?
Man, it's as simple as waking up, being healthy, stepping out into the sunshine, and looking and saying, I have an opportunity today. I have one more day on this planet. I'm healthy. I have people that love me, and the potential of this day is whatever I want to make it. That's my definition of awesome, Nick.
That is truly awesome. Again, thank you so very much for your time, for your message. Again, everybody, please go check out Taking the Fight, a phenomenal film. I hope you guys as listeners have enjoyed and got as much value out of this conversation as I did. If you did, please share this out with someone that you think might need to hear this message, hear this conversation, check out the film. And as always, please leave us a rating and review wherever it is that you guys are listening to this podcast, as it helps us just grow the collective community as a whole. And greatly appreciate that. So thank you guys for doing this. As always, I am signing off with Stuart, wishing you all a truly awesome day. Cheers, everybody.